So, I think the first thing we like to start off these interviews is to make sure we have the right human being.
Yeah.
So would you identify yourself, please?
Okay, hi, I'm Tim. I'm the singer in the band The Charlatans.
So I think a lot of fans of the band would be surprised to know that you reside in Hollywood.
I know.
So how long have you been there, and what prompted the move?
The move happened 7 years ago, and I guess I was just like looking for some action, really. And as
opposed to England, where there was none whatsoever. Well, it was kind of a not a fertile moment in England, was it?
Well, in England, you know, I was kind of bored of London at the time, and I'd stayed in Manchester, you know, quite a lot. So I was kind of just looking for something new, really, and the opportunity came to sort of like share a room with someone in Hollywood. So I moved to Orange and. A place called Lanewood.
This is Katie, our producer.
Hi, Katie. Hi. How you doing? You alright? Good to see you. I'm Tim. What's going on? So, that was about 7 years ago. And I've just been there ever since, really.
Now, South by Southwest, which is the last time that I saw the band at the big Stubbs thing, was that the coming out party for the new album? Was the album even out yet? Because I know that you introduced a few of the new songs. It was the first time anybody really in the U.S. heard it, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it was the first time anyone in the world had heard it because we'd done one gig before that, which is a place called Little Radio in Los Angeles. That was kind of a warm-up thing. And then South by Southwest was the first time anyone in the world had anything. Yeah.
That was pretty exciting, too. And we were listening on the way here. We recognized you played New York City. I don't know if you opened with that, but that was pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, we're opening with it tonight.
So. It was a pretty big band. Did you have any time to see anybody else while you were there that knocked your socks off or otherwise?
No.
You didn't get into the Arctic Monkeys? I mean, people were trying to get in, so...
I'd seen them the night before actually, in Hollywood they played at, just down the street from me. So
there are a lot of city songs in this album. They're more about respect and fear and celebration and the London bombings and 9/11. So this is a pretty, I mean, it's an interesting thing because we could refer to the influences and all that. But this is a pretty heavy album. I mean, it's all the things that the Charlatans are known for. You know, it's melodic and you know you've added a little reggae to the mix and all of that.
Yeah.
But tell me a little bit about the meaning behind the songs, because when I really sat and read the lyrics today, I said, whoa, you know, it sounds happy, but there's an awful lot going on there.
I guess I was probably going through a bit of a, some fear and some dread, actually, and just in particular, just in my own life, and I was seeing everything through sort of like quite a grim perspective, really.
But the melodies are nice.
The melodies are always good because I do like a tune, you know.
So a lot of them are very cinematic to me. So are we gonna, if we were gonna put them in a movie, would it be the new Donnie Darko or the new Once Upon a Time in America?
Well, I'd probably go for Donnie Darko because it's a bit more modern. But I mean, Once Upon a Time in America. I mean, you know, it was when we were recording it. You know, I had to get it out just to sort of like, you know, just to add to the cinematic. I mean, you know, Sergio is a god.
And now, The Architect,
that's
kind of part song, part poem. That's very kind of, you know, you sit and you read the lyrics, and it's kind of, you wouldn't expect to be able to put a melody to that. It's kind of, right, when you just read the lyrics, it's more like reading a poem. You could do a spoken word reading of that one.
Well, it's kind of how it came about, really. I mean, the words and the music were separate. I mean, Tony and Martin pretty much had the song, as an instrumental, you know, from the start to the finish. You just need a melody and words, and I had the melody that and kind of like all these just words about sort of rockers reuniting and getting killed in alleyways and stuff.
Lovely, really lovely moments. You put up pictures of Joe and Graham in the studio, but neither of them did a Mother Teresa on you. They didn't like suddenly you weren't staring at them and nothing weird happened.
No, I've had weird.
But I mean, it was inspiration.
It's all inspiration. I have had weird moments about Graham with Graham before. I've been to. Joshua Tree Inn, and I've done photo sessions in the room that he passed away in and stuff, and you know, there's been kind of weird moments happen there, but I just used them as symbols of things, of greatness, symbols of greatness, really, passion, love, and just beauty of great musicians and artists. And that was the reason why I did it on there, just so I could try, even though knowingly failing every time, but try and be as good as that.
But you did Sympatico in a big studio this time, right? And it was, and you did it in just 30 days.
We did it in 30 days.
And 30 songs, am I correct? No, 30 songs in 30 days?
No.
That would be a song a day. That's pretty darn amazing, if you ask me.
It was 16 songs in 30 days.
Ah. That's still, but you chose the big studio this time. Was it time to have a lush approach, or?
Well, we could have spent like 60 days in a not so lush studio. We decided
to accomplish the same thing.
Yeah, probably. So we just decided, you know, I mean, we had to be finished in 30 days.
And you chose.
We would have run out of money.
And you chose Jim Lowe for the Dracula connection.
Yes. There are other members in the band who chose him for different reasons than this. And I wasn't 100% sold by the work that he'd done in the past because I'd never really heard any of it. But I did find out that there's a friend of a friend of mine whose daughter is Christopher Lee's daughter. We played all the major Dracula characters in the 70s, and his daughter is a fan of the Charlatans, and I found out that Jim Lowe had recorded Christopher Lee, because he's an opera singer, as well, and that made me say, woohoo, we're using Jim.
I mean, what has the band not been through? It's been through imprisonment and death and all of that. And yet people still write you up as one of the three Manchester bands. But longevity counts, right?
I guess longevity counts. I mean, we I guess, are always to some people going to be sort of like, put in that wonderful Manchester bracket. And, you know, I guess everyone comes from some sort of thing, you know, but...
But with all the current Britpop bands, and, you know, the ones that last, you know, I mean, a few of them last, but, you know, of course, we read that NME, and at the front of every single one of them, you know, but the ones that get the long mojo articles are the ones that count, right?
Right. Oh, I guess so. I mean, I think we're still looking for a long mojo article at the moment. Maybe we'll get it in 20 years, but I don't know. I mean, for me, I mean, it's, you know... What has happened with the band and what's enabled us to do is to still be incredible fans of music. And, you know, we started off really young and we were fans of music then, but we're, you know, a lot older now and still fans of music, but different kinds of music, you know. But that's natural because I don't listen to the same stuff all the time as I did when I was 16.
So... 2 weeks from now, you leave America and you hit all of the all the big festivals in Europe. So, you're looking forward to that. Now, will it be the first time all this material has made it to back there?
Yeah, of course. Well, we did a tour, sort of like in clubs, say about the same size as this, something like, you know, 1,000, 2,000. And now, but to the festivals, it'll be like, you know, a huge broad spectrum of people that will not have even probably got the record yet. So, you know, so it's going to be quite exciting to play to them. And plus, English people like to roll around in the mud. So it'd be quite fun to watch as well.
What's the strangest gig on this part of the tour that has had something strange happen? What's the strangest thing? Anything really bizarre? People just kind of either calling out the wrong song by the wrong band or...
Well, I mean, someone jumped on purpose from the top balcony and really hurt themselves badly, but...
During any particular song? Did one of the songs depress them or something?
I think it must have been on acid, I think. Or else,
you got to be careful what you write.
It was the last song. So, I mean, you know...
So it all added up for them.
It all added up. And it was like the last song, and then the next minute is in hospital. So.
Have you been working on the song? I was listening to the solo album for the first time in a while the other night. Have you begun work on another one? In your head, at least?
No. Well, I'm just trying to gather up sort of every celebrity in the world to just play on it. It's going to be my next angle.
And what about any more guest appearances? I mean, the thing about the Chemical Brothers, and it's interesting because their new one, The Magic Numbers, you know, are on there, which is pretty. We had them on the show a few weeks back.
Great.
Yeah, pretty wonderful stuff. So tell me a little bit about what it's like to kind of work with people like that. Because, I mean, you've worked with a lot of cool people over the years, but you've also spread yourself into a lot of interesting things.
Well, it's good because it gives you the jitters, really. Makes you quite nervous because you don't know what to expect. So it's, it's kind of like, you know, when...
So it's actually a challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
And you like that.
Yes, I do. You know, I mean, you know their records, but you don't know how they work in a... in a
I don't think studio. People here even really know the level of what they do, just how good they are.
Right. Well, I would say that, I mean, obviously they're great performers, but I think technically they're incredible producers. They sit around like professors, really.
Yeah, they really are. They're musicologists.
Yeah, that's right.
So the other thing that I think most of my listeners probably don't know a thing about is Chav.
Chavs.
Well. Now, Carl, needless to say, is a little happy to be out of the Libertines situation. I mean, wow.
Well, I think he took a lot of it on his shoulders, personally, as well as musically, in the end, you know. But while he was, I guess, kind of, in the middle of, before starting the Dirty Pretty Things, we promised an audience a concert, a free concert, and it was just me and him, Martin Duffy from Primal Scream, and Andy Burrows from Razorlight.
The new single I just got, and it's wonderful.
Oh yeah. The Razorlight, great. But it's just mine and Cal's band really that we had a. It was just crazy. We just jammed from Los Angeles to San Diego, and then decided to do it in Chatham, place in England. And Chav is some. It really comes from Chatham.
Neat. Okay, so I love this story, and I just want to ask you about this. I read that one day you queued up Uncle Ernie instead of We're Not Going to Take It by Mistake.
Yeah.
I want you to tell me that really wasn't intended.
It wasn't intended.
That you didn't want to play Uncle Ernie in a club.
No, it was kind of like my protest. We're not going to take it.
I don't know, but Uncle Ernie could be a protest against a whole different...
Exactly.
Whole different level of reality.
Well... I guess so, yeah, but it was just at the time.
I mean, that particular song coming out in a club must have really. I mean, they think you're psychedelic, but come on.
It was just, it was the first time I'd really been DJing and just sort of like pulled it off and started the other one up, really.
Have you done any other good ones recently? Or has that been.
No, I always pretend that my mistakes are jazz these days.
Right, exactly. They're jazz. So the last thing we like to do to fill up the hour, and I think you of all people are going to go nuts about this, and then you're going to say, but I didn't get to prepare. We do a thing called a musical sandwich.
Right.
And what it is two charlatan songs as the bread.
Yeah.
And then anything you want to play in between from any other artist, and I will play it. I bring in the CDs and the records precisely as you ask for it. So rather than me saying, oh, what were your influences?
Yeah.
Two charlatan songs, old or new, and then give me a bunch of music in between, Bort.
Golden Brown Stranglers. Let's have a look. Wait for the Blackout, the Damned. White Man in Hammersmith Palais, Clash, Coma Girl, Joe Strummer. That's pretty good. I'd like to need to play that. $1,000 Wedding is always a good one. Although it's too slow. No,
that's okay. We can mix it up.
God, I'm always trying to think. Unless I've got something. I always like New Order actually, quite a lot. Age of Consent, New Order, that's quite a good one. Captain, I said what?
Oh, there you go. I love that.
Uncle Ernie.
I was going to ask you. I was going to do that. I was going to do that at the beginning. Even if you didn't ask for it, that was going to appear in there somehow just on principle. It's only taking a minute anyway, right?
Bang Bang, Dirty Pretty Things. Let's have a look. In my head right now.
Great. Now give me two charlatan songs to surround it with.
Do you want to do City of the Dead?
Sure.
And is there anything else that you want?
Terrific.
You want to know, maybe?
I know that song.
Yes.
I've only played it about a million. It was actually really fun at South by Southwest to watch the audience because I was with a friend who sort of, he said, well, no, I think I know who they are. And I said, no. You know who they are.
Right.
And you played the new stuff and then you went into that. And it was really fun watching the crowd react because they probably hadn't heard it heavily except on shows like mine since, 91, 92.
Exactly. People think it's cool.
And people are thinking, well, no, but say that again, right?
People think it's a cover version when we do it.
I know, and they're like, wait a minute, I used to love that band.
Exactly. And it's like, why did the word "used" to come into it? That's what we want to know.
No, but then he turned around and he said, but, you know, the new music's is good. And I said, thank you very much. That's the whole point.
I think it's just...
But it's progressed,
quite,
you know?
It's quite hard. I mean, I remember I like The Cure, but there's so many records in between, you know, Boys Don't Cry and their last stuff that I've missed out on, you know what I mean? Just because you do. Yeah.
Was White Shirt a single over there?
It wasn't, actually.
Because that's the other track that I launched onto the second it came out heavily. And I play that, and you get phone calls saying, "Who? You know, what year did that come out? Did that come out in, like, 66? And I say, no, that came out.
That sounds like it could come out now, actually. Because it's like, you know, with all the sort of, like, modern stuff. But, you know, with all the the new British stuff that's coming out. But, you know, we were very influenced by San Francisco when we first started.
Well, yeah, I mean, but again, people pegged you because that's easy. Oh, it's a psychedelic kind of.
Well, but we were listening to stuff like, you know, all the sort of like Nuggets records and sort of like West Coast experimental bands and United States of America, you know, that band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, how ironic that you're playing here at the Fillmore, where 80% of those bands.
Yeah, it's total honor, man. You know, always has been.